On Radio Gorgeous Day, I'm very happy to be talking with Zanab Khan. She's an anthropologist and a citizen of the world. She's originally from Pakistan, but she's lived in New York, London, well, Germany, and now she's proper resident in London. She recently started a community called Coffee and Henna, and today she's going to tell us all about it, and she's going to interview me, Josephine Pembroke from Radio Gorgeous, which makes a change. You know, I'm sick of asking the questions. Hi, welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here and slightly nervous.
Good. Keep you on your toes, darling. Okay, so the first thing I said to you is, have you brought your henna equipment? And
yes,
you said yes. So tell us what it is.
So henna comes in a really just very simple cone. It's kind of like an icing cone. It's really funny because most people think that using a cone for henna means that I can ice cakes. I can't. I'm terrible at them. But it comes in a really simple cone that you just squeeze like you would ice a cake. And it's really just easily set up. I tend to buy cones ready-made just because making them naturally, it takes a lot of time and hard to do in London. But so it's just a really simple cone. And I just draw a free hand on you.
Okay, so what are you going to put on my hand?
So what I usually do is, for coffee and henna, I do really simple designs that people can kind of, you know, dress up with their jewelry, and it goes with everyday clothes. Typically, henna is, you know, applied on brides from Asian and Arab backgrounds, and they'll get henna applied basically everywhere. So you'll have all four sides of your hands covered. Sometimes they go up to the elbow, and sometimes even your feet.
So is it cultural, or is there some well-being thing behind it?
It's a little mixture of both, actually. Yeah. So it's been, it's kind of like a cultural thing. It's a way of adorning yourself on special occasions. So we do it on weddings. I do it on Eid. Indians do it on Diwali. We'll do it on very, very special occasions. You'll have the bride who's completely decked out in henna, full hands, full arms. And then you'll have your like bridal party who have a little bit on their hands and arms as well. So it's kind of like just a reminder of your culture, something to show that you're celebrating something special. And for me, I really love sharing it with people. So when I do it for coffee and henna, I do just really simple designs, something that will start usually around the wrist. Don't just go up one of the fingers. So it's kind of covering about 40% of your skin, and it just kind of imprints on your skin.
What's the well-being aspect? Is it got some antibacterial properties or something?
Well, it has a lot of natural, it's just naturally made. So it comes from a plant. The plant has really natural kind of, euryboridiac?
Okay.
I can't say that.
Yeah.
But it just has really natural, like, it's a natural product. It does really kind of calms you down. It relaxes you, cools you when it's going into your skin. So it's basically staining your skin. Mm. And it kind of gives like a cooling sensation, and you kind of get a little bit cold, but it also kind of relaxes
you. Well, also the countries you're talking about are very hot.
Yes.
So for them to have something cool put on their hand is probably really... Also, the great thing about having this done is you have to sit still.
Absolutely.
And there's something about that, which again, it's slightly meditative because you are relaxing, aren't you?
Yeah, it's kind of like a combination of someone's drawing on you and you're allowing them to just draw on you, something that's going to be on you for a week. It's like this little bond with this artist, and it's creative, and it is very much a cooling effect. I think, you know, most brides will have to wear like sweaters or something, even if it's in the middle of summer, because if they're getting their whole body covered, they do get cold. So it kind of has a very calming meditative effect because you have to sit still.
Is it only females that have it done?
Typically, but I've seen nowadays guys will do it as well. Sometimes it's very, very rare, but some do it for, you know, supporting their wife, kind of like having, you know, balance. But it's very typically Asian for women. Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to start then?
Absolutely. So I'm going to start. I've got a cone in my hand, and I've kind of got, it's about half full, which makes it easier because I can fold it in half. And it makes it easier for me to put just the right pressure so the lines come out fine enough, because I like doing quite delicate and fine designs. So I will share a picture with you afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start at the wrists. And what I will usually do is, in my head, I've usually looked at designs before for inspiration. So I'll have a couple of ideas. My signature is very much traditional Indian. So it's very loopy, very florally. It's lots of dots. So I have like an idea. We're going to do something from your wrist going up one of your fingers.
Mm.
I'll do like a couple of empty big shapes, and then within that I'll start doing a little bit of details and dotting and crossing the eyes, basically. So I just think it's very, you might feel a cold sensation.
Okay. So Zanab, can you talk while you do it? That's the most important thing.
Just about.
Okay.
I can talk very slowly. I might get a little bit stammery if I do, but yeah, I can just about talk. So feel free to ask any questions you'd like.
Okay, so how did you learn how to do this? Because you weren't... Well, tell us about your journey. I know you're meant to be interviewing me, but guess what? It's all the tables have turned because I can't help doing my job. You were born in Pakistan. How long were you there?
I was actually born in Germany.
Are you born in Germany?
Yeah. So I was born...
Oh, you're from Pakistani origin.
Origins, yeah. Yes, that's it. So I was born in Germany. Both my parents are Pakistani. Mm. My mom grew up in London and moved over to Germany after she met my father, mm-hmm. who had moved to Holland and Germany when he was about 17 from Pakistan to start a life. Mm-hmm. So they spent a good 15 years of their life in Germany setting up. This is back in the 80s and 90s. Mm. So I was there for about 2 years. Mm. And from there, we went over to New York. So they wanted to start fresh in the 90s. And it was very much the time that everyone's moving out to America.
So lucky you to be brought up. Was that, were you on Manhattan or were you off the island?
I was off the island. So I initially was in Queens. So that's where a lot of the kind of Asian immigrant population usually ended up. Mm-hmm. And then after a few years, we found ourselves more in the suburbs, the Long Island area.
Well, yeah, to grow up, because actually you want to be somewhere a bit greener, a bit quieter.
Absolutely. Yeah, I grew up with very much that keep your door open, play in the like street with your neighborhoods. I loved it. I absolutely loved living in New York.
And was it a primarily Asian neighborhood where you ended up?
No, it wasn't actually. I knew very few Asian people growing up. It was mainly my parents' social circles. But where I lived, it was quite multicultural, actually.
So that's great. That's very, opens your mind.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think for me, most of my traveling and moving around is what kind of sparked my interest in meeting different people from different backgrounds. I mean, growing up in a different culture also does that, but...
Yes, because already you're different, aren't you?
Yeah.
Because you've got two ways of looking at things,
You have to, like, see what works for your family and your background, but also what works for the society that you live in, so...
But your parents, are they quite liberal? They're Muslim, aren't they? But they're kind of... Are they? How religious are they?
It's quite interesting. My parents, I think, through the years have somehow become a combination of more liberal as well as more religious. Wow. So I think they've become more practicing in the sense of religion. They're very much try and practice regularly, pray regularly. But they've also become more liberal in the sense of the leniency they give us. So if I see myself next to other women of my community, there's some... what I find in England is women from the Muslim background are way more highly educated and have more ambition. But my parents also...
What, than in America?
Yeah, I found quite a few people have more ambition to not only get married at an age that was suitable for the culture or community, but they also were quite educated. Whereas in the States, I think I always found came across more women... more in a hurry to get married. Maybe it was just the community I met. But so coming into London, it was quite an interesting mix for me because I had grown up in the Pakistani culture. I spoke the language, but I didn't really interact with as many Muslims or as many Pakistanis. So for me, I kind of grew up a bit of a strict environment. But through the years, my parents became a lot easier.
But you don't wear a headscarf, do you?
No, I chose not to.
Does your mother?
No, my mom doesn't either. So she's they are very much liberal. My parents are. They've very much given me the freedom to move away for university, which not a lot of girls in my community did. I had an opportunity last year to go to New York for a bit for work, which essentially meant moving there, but I just ended up going for a few months, and they gave me that, like, leniency. So I'm really thankful that, like, it's a balance.
So they treat you quite like an American girl, then?
Yeah, just an independent, like, Western girl, but also... I know how much my culture means to me, so I know my boundaries. I push them. I definitely push their boundaries, but I know how much it means to me, so I kind of find my balance.
And what about dating? Do you date people from your own culture or you were more...
It's interesting. I think growing up, I didn't have an interest of being with someone from the same culture. I always used to joke with my mom that, you know, like, I didn't want to marry someone Pakistani. And she kind of laughed it off. I think they would definitely prefer that. As I've gotten older, it's become something that interests me more to be with someone from the same background. I think,
but they'd have to have the same outlook as you.
Oh,
imagine
absolutely.
If you got, you know, went with someone and they literally said, right, you know, they treated you in a very old-fashioned way. You would not be happy.
Absolutely. I mean, I am somebody who, I mean, I've lived.
You're a modern girl.
Yeah, I've had a balance of everything. I'm very happy to get up in the morning and pray and sit on a prayer mat. But I also, you know, I do like dancing and I like go clubbing here and there.
Yeah.
So it definitely...
You're not going to stop living, are you?
Exactly. No. I definitely think there's the difficulty of finding someone that kind of sees life in my way. Mm. I can be a bit of a free spirit. I like traveling. I like doing things on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. We'll see. There's time.
Yeah. How old are you?
I'm 24.
Okay. So I think you have got another 10 years.
I've got a little while.
Yeah. Fantastic. So this is very beautiful.
Thank you so much. I've gotten so distracted. I'm going quite slower than I usually do.
Yeah, well, it's because I'm distracting you.
That's totally fine with me. I love answering questions.
Tell me about coffee and henna. What is it? What do you do apart from put henna on? And how do you meet total strangers? How does one meet a total stranger?
Honestly, the amount of times I've told people that I meet strangers for my project, they get a little worried and they're like, you know, are you okay with that? Do you tell somebody where you're going? Mm. Is it safe?
I'm like, are you in a public place?
Yeah. Like, do you share your location with other people? I'm like, no, not really. I just kind of trust the world a little bit.
Yeah.
But we're in a world where we're using apps to meet, like, partners nowadays. Yeah. I think meeting a stranger for a coffee is not unheard of.
So how do you finding the strangers?
It started off with a mixture. Well, let me tell you a little bit more how it started off. So for me, I very much love learning about people's stories, especially women's stories. So I studied anthropology at Bristol and I did my dissertation in aspirations, on the topic of aspirations. So I interviewed women from my generation and my background and tried to find out, you know, how do they balance their aspirations in terms of career with the aspirations their parents expect of them, both in career, marriage, and personal.
So brilliant, because it all applies to you.
Exactly. And that's where the best stories come from, like people who connect with, like, your story.
Yeah.
And that's what sparked my interest in getting to know different types of people and different stories. Mm. And then when I was working in New York, I worked for a fashion startup that very much focused on empowering women and hanging out with entrepreneurial, badass, can I say badass?
Yeah, you can.
badass, gorgeous women.
Yeah.
And I just came across some wonderful people. I met, you know, Leslie Bloodgett, who's the founder of Bare Minerals. I met the founder of some really amazing startups based in New York and London. And I just loved hanging out with women doing amazing stuff. And I love hearing stories. So for me, I wanted a way to kind of share those stories, but also share stories of other women, you know, kind of like the underrepresented, you know, mothers and teachers.
Well, everyday people.
Everyday people, yeah. So I found a way that I can share henna, which is something I just did leisurely for family events and weddings with these people. And I found a way to kind of just have a reason for people to meet up, because, I mean, we're all so busy nowadays that everyone needs a reason to meet up. So henna is a great way, because people love, you know, exploring that, trying out new cultures, I guess, creativity. So I just found a way to meet people, and I meet them over Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, friends of friends, my network. I kind of come across people in, you know, articles or blogs or TV shows, and I reach out to them. I just met somebody who used to be on a reality TV show. So it's a whole range of
people.
Tell
me who they are, because some people out there might know them.
There's a reality TV show called Desi Rascals. It was, I think it was on ITV or BBC. I'm not entirely sure, but it was kind of like TOWIE or Made in Chelsea, but for the South Asian community in London.
Wow, fantastic.
So it only went on for a couple of seasons, but I met a lovely girl from there who's now a dancer. Jo. So she's fantastic. I met her and I was quite surprised, because a lot of people, you know, if they have a big following on social media, they're a little harder to get to. They're a little harder to be interested. But I've had some really, like, even though Coffee and Henna is a small project, I've had some really lovely and really influential, like, people being up for it. And I'm really thankful for that, because I get
to
meet lots
of people.
I've met a couple of bloggers, which is the most, which was quite exciting. I've met a blogger, you know, who speaks six languages, grew up in Miami and then moved over to London, studied at St. Andrews, and then works for herself and runs a blog and runs a consultancy company. And then I'm trying to remember all the stories. I met, when I was in New York, I met somebody who worked for AJ Plus, which is Al Jazeera's, like, online digital media company. And she does a lot of the YouTube, like, kind of videos reporting for them. So
she's
a video producer, basically, and a presenter. Yeah. She was really fascinating. That was in San Francisco. So Coffee and Henna gone a little bit worldwide now as well.
So what are you, apart from doing Coffee and Henna, which can't earn you much money, apart from experiences, what are you doing to make money, darling?
So Coffee and Henna is very much just a personal project. I work freelance. I work for an advertising agency where I am a kind of like a digital creative. So I do social media marketing, basically, for a range of clients, from Kettle Chips, Metcalf's Popcorn, Badger Beer. So
fun.
Anything social media related with that. And previously to that, I was I worked in startups.
I mean, that is the good thing about your age. It's a job that will always be for early 20-somethings. Yeah. They can do social media in a company because companies know they've got to have social media, yeah, but they don't know how to do it.
Yeah, it's still very much. I mean, I was in startups, so in startups, everybody's more familiar with social media, I feel, because it's, you know, it's technology and based, so everyone's kind of familiar with, you know, Instagram and Facebook. But going into some other kind of industry where it's not...
Yeah, like Kettle Chips. Why would
they? It's been exciting because you can, like, really revamp things. And it's something I do really enjoy. I do want to go into more business later on, but it's something that I've really enjoyed doing right now, early on.
Well, also, it's very much people-based, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think everything I do has to revolve around people. Mm. I've learned that.
So tell us about... How long were you in Bristol?
You were in Bristol, weren't you?
Yeah,
you
worked at Radio Bristol.
Where did you live?
I actually lived in Bath, and I regret that because everyone says Bristol is the most fun place ever to live.
I won't lie, like, I had an amazing time in Bristol. I mean, I've had the fortunate, like, upbringing of being next to two really big cities, New York and London, but Bristol, going into a small town that was kind of like a city, but it had small town vibes, I loved it. Mm. I adored it.
It's also very much a colourful, creative, slightly hippie place.
Absolutely.
It?
I didn't even realise. Yeah. I ended up there completely by chance.
Yeah, it's like San Francisco in UK.
Absolutely, yeah. One of the reasons I loved it. Yeah. San Francisco, Bristol and Lisbon, they're all very similar and they're all my favourite cities in the world. But I ended up there for university by chance, and I absolutely loved it. I was there for 3 years and I lived in Clifton Village.
Oh God, yeah. That's the best address.
Yeah, it was amazing. Like, I was 5 minutes walk from uni, and it was just a wonderful experience.
Oh, great fun! And then you've gone and got a job in London.
Yeah, my family's based here, so it was quite an easy option to come back.
So they've moved back, have they, to here?
Yeah, so we all moved to London when we about 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why I have the American accent.
Yes, you do.
A very strong one.
You don't have a New York accent.
No,
you've just got kind of. If I was going to say, oh, she's got the American film voice, that's what you've got, the general.
It's quite
American.
Neutral, yeah. I get that a lot. It's not very strong.
You haven't
strong.
Got an accent. No.
It's, yeah, it's
but
not
you've
very
got
strong.
An American. Yeah, we would, anyone English would say, oh my gosh.
She's American.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Yeah.
I have moments where I get very British as well.
Yeah.
So where do
your parents live?
So we live out in Essex. I live with my family in Essex.
Oh, that's great. So you've got somewhere free to live.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a fortunate thing.
Really fortunate. Everything's fortunate about you.
I have to be thankful. I really have to be thankful for my experiences and, like, fortune. Some of the experiences came out of hard times, but I've learned so much from it. And I've been very lucky that I could come back to London and find a career over here.
Great. So Zanab, you're doing my hand. Now, I'm going to put you in the hot seat. Tell me what you'd be asking me.
Well, what I usually do with Coffee and Henna is I just like to get to know everyone's story. So it's a really tough and plain question, but I just ask, what's your story?
Okay.
So I just want to know where you come from, what drives you, and how you ended up doing Radio Gorgeous.
Oh my God, that's such a big question.
I know.
Because I am a little bit older than you. I'm twice your age and a bit. So what happened to me was I was in a family of three girls and I didn't get much attention. So because of that, I was a massive, I didn't get attention in the family. So because of that, I was a massive attention seeker.
Mm.
So my whole thing was showing off. I really my only way of getting any kind of joy of life was showing off. And I found out that singing was a way of communicating.
Oh my gosh, you're a singer.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So I started off at school. I loved this song, Hey Big Spender by Shirley Bassey.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
I was famous in my school for getting on the teacher's desk in break and everyone would come and see me.
I have been famous for getting on desks and dancing, to be fair.
Ah, got something in common. So I had that drive in me, and also my family did annoy me and I didn't get attention from them. So I kind of acted out, and so I was more interested in the outside world. And so as soon as I could, I got down to London age 17.
Oh, wow.
And, I thought I wanted to be a makeup artist because I loved wearing makeup.
Yeah.
And, then that didn't last long because you had to work hard and do biology. So I kind of left there. And then I got I've done millions of different jobs, but the first job I got was I had my own stall in a market called Kensington Market, which is a bit like Camden Market.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Full of really alternative people. And I ended up working there for about 2 years. My stall closed down, but I ended up working in different stalls selling sort of vintage clothes, secondhand clothes. I worked in the cafe there. I had really good fun. And at the same time, I met lots of people that were running nightclubs. So I started going to nightclubs a lot. And my job sort of was going to nightclubs and wearing different outfits every night. And then I started kind of getting up on stage in nightclubs because rapping started coming in, and there was a place called the Rapping Club. And I just got up on stage with all these scary black men from New York, and I kind of started rapping, and they kicked me off stage, but then I'd try and get back on again.
Oh, that's amazing.
I thought, age about 19, I thought, I've got to start a band. And I met a guy who worked on Boy on the King's Road, and he was a musician. And he said, yes, Josephine, I was going to retire, but I will start again for you. So we started a band, a take on my name called Jozo and the Fiends.
Oh, wonderful.
And because he'd been in the music biz, he got us gigs everywhere. I performed at The Fridge. I performed at The Clarendon. You won't have heard of it. I performed at loads of pubs. I performed everywhere. And we also did lots of busking. Where I learnt my skill. I just got up in Covent Garden with a little microphone and a little speaker, and him with a guitar, and we sang. We performed outside nightclubs at night. We performed in nightclubs. We performed everywhere. And I must say, that's where I learnt my stagecraft, where I learnt to kind of get people's attention. You know, I mean, I already had a bit, but I kind of learnt how to hold an audience, and still wasn't a very good singer.
I don't believe that.
And then I was living in Chelsea at the time, and someone took me on the back of a motorbike to Soho, and I'd never been there. I was like 18, 19, and I thought, oh my gosh, I have found the place where I love. Soho was just full of interesting people. It was full of art students because St. Martin's School of Art was there.
Of course.
And I felt really at home, I found, with artists. I suddenly found my tribe, you know, and I started going there all the time, and then my aspiration was to become a bohemian. I don't know whether it's a job, really, but it was all I wanted to do is become a bohemian.
Is that kind of like hipster for us nowadays? Yeah, well, like, become a hipster today.
I think it even wasn't a hipster then. I think then it was like you were meant to be trendy, but bohemian was this word which meant you live for art, you
of
know,
course,
and you
yeah.
And you know, and I love the idea, like, of being sort of slightly alcoholic and wearing silk pajamas. I used to go out in silk pajamas all the time to nightclubs. And this
reminds me of Rent. Have you seen Rent, the musical?
No.
It reminds me of that. It's a very bohemian life.
So I kind of lived this life where I'd just go to a nightclub at night, and the next day kind of be writing songs and singing. And then someone gave me a ring one day and said, look, someone hasn't turned up at work. Will you come and work here? And it was a job in PR.
Oh, wow.
And they said, you're really good at this because you're really good at chatting to people. Do you want a job here? I said, okay. So my job was, I was the Beck's beer girl in London. And I had to go around Beck's Beer. It was the first time anyone had sponsored art events. And I had to go, Gilbert and George, Bruce MacLean, all these different artists. I had to go to all their private views, yeah. And I had to serve the beer. And at the same time, I've got blonde hair and I wore plaits and I dressed in a dirndl. So I looked like a German.
Oh my gosh.
I've always liked the outfits. Anyway, so I really enjoyed that. Then someone heard I was really good at PR, so they said, there's another job going at a place called Willy Ware, which was a New York-based fashion design company, but they're in London, and it was run by a black guy called Willie Smith. And I had such fun there. Again, I was the first person that worked there, but got us into Vogue and got into Elle magazine.
That's fantastic.
And everyone was really impressed. So then Lynn Franks, who was a top PR in London, heard about me, and she said, Josephine, please, please come and work for me. So I thought I was coming to work for her. I was really excited. She said, I've never not given an interview, but you've had such good reports and I'm on holiday in Greece. Please really come and work for me. So in the evenings, apart from that, I was also doing drama because I always still wanted the stage.
Yeah.
I still wanted the stage show. I was at night. Yeah, I go to City Lit, it was called, and I do drama courses. And so I said, yeah, I'll come and work there. And I found out I wasn't working for Lynn Franks. I was working for a girl called Caroline, who was such a bitch. And she'd say things like, oh, take notes, da, da, da. I was like someone's assistant. And I know it sounds awful, but I've been in charge. I was head of PR at all these companies, or, you know. So I just couldn't be an assistant. So everyone was really shocked when I said, I'm leaving this company. Because everyone, you know, to work there was like the biggest dream job. You know, our clients are people like Jean-Paul Gaultier, you know, it was really amazing. But I left because I literally thought, I just don't. And also, it was a real culture of very hard work, yeah. which didn't suit me. You had to work till 8:30 or 9 at night.
Oh, gosh.
And I just wanted to do my performing. So I thought, right, I'm going to go for drama school. This is what I'm going to do. I applied for quite a few and I got into one. And my instincts said, don't go to this place. It's dodgy. But I negated. I didn't listen to my instincts, mm-hmm. stupidly. And I went there for a term. And the first term they said, oh, you're a spoilt rich girl, which I wasn't. I might have been spoilt, but I wasn't rich. You're going to have a nervous breakdown here. You're not the right sort. You overact. You're useless. You stick out like a sore thumb on stage.
Gosh.
You're really bad. You've got, you're all over the place. You're too full of life on stage. We've got to clamp you down. You know, they gave me the worst roles. Then in February, they said, and the thing I'd found is I'd sacrificed so much to go on this course. I'd given up, PR career. I'd not seeing any of my friends. I wasn't going out. I'd even given up drinking for a month, which was unheard of. And then in February, they said, right, at the end of this time term, we always choose someone to throw out to make you all work harder. Wow. And we're choosing you, Josephine. And I went, what? And I was in such shock that I just left that day. And I went to the pub with them all afterwards. I said, I can't believe it. And my teacher there, she said, Josephine, just to let you know, I worked with Rupert Everett. He got chucked out. He was really good. They say you're a sore thumb on stage. That's probably a good sign. You show up on stage, Don't you give up, girl, So I was like, okay. So then I got a job when I left. My friend was launching a magazine. I got a job there. But I was still hankering after performing. And I bought, I passed my driving test, and I bought a very, very old 1960s BMW.
Nice.
It's beautiful. And I called her beige. She was beige. And she was beige inside. And at the time, I was wearing all black leather. And because, I'm always into costume and different looks. And I was just driving along. And I suddenly thought, oh, my God, I'm a James Bond girl. This is it. I'm in the James Bond films. I'm going to start a group and I'm going to be in charge. It's going to be my group. I'm going to style it. I'm going to write the songs. I'm going to book the gigs, because I've realised everything I'd done before in music biz, I've been waiting for somebody else to make it happen. I thought, I'm going to make it happen.
You do yourself.
So I went on holiday on my own to Greece. I got the backing tracks. It was tape recorders. I got backing tracks of all the songs, and I wrote a kind of a cabaret show around it, and I rewrote the words. And I kind of gave it, and then got all the tunes. And then I went back, and house music was just in. It was the early 90s. And I found these guys. I said, look, please, can you do backing tracks that would sound good in a nightclub? So I kind of sang Goldfinger, Diamonds Forever, all these songs, but with different beats, made it sound like a club act.
Wow.
At the same time, a friend of mine was launching literally parties called Pussy Posse Parties.
Oh, wow.
And our band, by coincidence, was called Pussies Galore.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So suddenly we were like the movement of pussies in London. It was all literally a coincidence. And everybody wanted to know us. We're on the front cover of all the magazines, or as in every newspaper. I was, in fact, I'm writing my biography at the moment, and it's called Famous for One Summer. Because I really was famous.
That is so exciting.
I was on the front cover of The Face. I was in Time Out every week. And this is when publications meant more, what I mean? Like, because there was no internet, so the only way you could find out information was by buying Time Out. I think it sold 250,000 copies then, and then The Face was so big. Oh, sorry, I keep smudging it a bit because I use my hands.
That's okay, don't worry. I like that.
And then, oh my God, you should see the design she's done on my hand. I can't wait to put it onto, this can be the picture, which is going to go on the podcast. Anyway, so Pussies Galore literally changed my life. And the girls I did it with, they'd be my best friends forever. And because of that, it all finished after about 3 years, and I got married and I had a child and moved to Bath and thought, but I did like being on stage, but I also kind of want to be a presenter. So I got into radio, became a radio person in Bristol, came back to London 10 years ago and thought, women, empowerment, radio, I loved it. It's performing. I'm going to start Radio Gorgeous. And now we're Britain's longest running all-female podcasters. Founded in 2011. We're in our seventh year now.
That's amazing. Yeah. You must have met some incredible people in the last...
I really have. In fact, I interviewed Lynn Franks last week.
No one really.
I didn't remind her that I was a woman and that had run
Did
away.
Did she not remember you?
Well, I think she would. That's why I didn't want to say. Because I did kind of walk out of her company.
Yeah. Who's been the most exciting person that you've come across?
I think, well, every person I meet is inspiring because they're all women who decided to go out and do something interesting. You know, so every woman, in fact, everyone always says, who's the most interesting person? The most interesting person, always the last person I've interviewed. It's a bit like you probably, because they're kind of in your mind and you've you're kind of thinking about them. They're in your kind of soul. But I'd say the most interesting really was E.O. Tillit Wright, who was known as He, and she said, I'm a girl, I'm a boy with boobs. So she was a girl, sorry, she wouldn't like to say this, but she was born a girl, but she said, I'm now a boy with boobs, and I'm very happy to have a vagina, boobs, but I am a boy. And her book was absolutely fascinating. She was brought up in the Lower East Side of New York, and her mother was a junkie, and she went to bed at kind of 1 a.m. every night, and her house was never knew what food she was going to eat. She was always starving.
She's fascinating.
And then her stepdad, who she never saw, she found out was ultra rich, and she didn't know this. Oh no, it was just so interesting, and it was really moving. And just, I think she'd decided her own identity. And there's not even a word. I think she's probably binary, but you know what I mean? It's like, that was a couple of years ago. There wasn't even a word for it then, you know.
She's at the forefront of all of this movement. Amazing.
No, she really is. She does TED Talks and things. No, I mean, I just find, you know, like just before you came, a really interesting girl was with us. Sorry, is my wrist
coming? No, it's okay. I'm just going to wipe this from your top.
Yeah, push it back.
There we go. Perfect.
So are we waiting for it to dry now, darling?
Yeah, sorry. So what I've done, typically it takes about 10 minutes to do a simple design that goes kind of up your finger. So I've just finished the design, and what it is henna is basically a kind of like a little paste. So it's kind of like paint. It's a little bit of a thick paste, and I've put that on your skin, and what it'll do is it'll stain your skin. So slowly, in about 15-20 minutes, it'll start getting dry, it'll get a bit crackly, and what we'll do is the longer you keep it on, the darker the stain is. So we'll keep it on for as long as possible. It's up to you how long you want to keep it on, but as soon as it's dry, you'll be able to use your hands. At the moment, if you use your hands, you'll probably ruin the design, but in about 10 minutes, when it's dry, you can just use your hands as usual, and then when it's finished, you can just take it off, basically.
No, it's beautiful. It looks like, I describe it as lace, actually. It looks like very fine lace. What is this design, and does it have a meaning?
Not really. For me, I love doing, if you see it, the kind of circles that I've done with a little bit of a head, it kind of has a peacock vibe to it. So usually you'll use that as a base and do kind of leaves coming out and things coming out. I do a lot of like loops on there. Loops create a lot of like space, so you can see the delicate lines and delicate design. And a lot of dots come in. It's kind of just like a little mixture of things. These kind of shapes are my main style, basically.
Can you do it on yourself?
I can, yes. So I can only do it on my left hand. Yeah, only on one hand. My brother got married back in May, and for me, I really wanted both hands done because it looks better when you have bangles on both hands for the wedding and your hands are covered.
So who did the other hand?
I had to find somebody. I don't know many henna artists, so I had to find somebody on Instagram to come do all four sides. But usually when it's special occasions, I'll just do one side because I'm quite particular about it. This is one of the reasons I learned henna, is because I was quite particular about it. And I wasn't always impressed by the way other people did it, so I picked it up myself and I just kept practicing.
So I'm a stranger, you've met me, you've heard my life story. What's the next step in Coffee and Henna?
So what's going to happen next is we're going to take some photos. So what I usually do is I meet up with people in different coffee shops, mainly to kind of show different parts of London as well, different types of coffee. Also, coffee is something that's so common to everyone. It's something that everyone drinks. Everybody wants to know, you know, what's the other person drinking and what's the other person doing. So I'll kind of post about what.
Okay, let's talk about our favorite. What coffee are you?
Okay, so this is gonna be a bit of a shocker, but I'm not the biggest coffee aficionado, which is ironic because I grew up, you know, in the States, and I lived in New York for work, and I worked in a fashion startup. It's kind of funny that I don't drink coffee as much, but if I like coffee, it's like chai latte, which isn't even
that's
that much coffee.
Sorry. They might sell it, but it's actually tea, everybody.
It's basically
tea. It's just and milk. It's actually Asian tea, so I love it. Okay, so you've been going back to your roots. Okay, shall I tell you, I'm actually a real wimp because I can only drink decaf as
really?
Well.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh.
So I have a decaf extra hot. Flat white.
It has to be extra hard.
Now, I tell you something that really winds up people very into coffee. And the place opposite where you went for coffee earlier, you probably had a chai latte.
I did.
Yeah. It's very real there, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It's quite yummy.
It's very real, yeah. It's called Artisan. It's opposite where I live. You can look it up, everybody. Anyway, they literally, I always say, extra hot, please.
They never do
it. They won't do it because they think that it's actually, you're ruining the coffee and everything. Yeah. The only place that will do it is Pret. So I love I love it at Pret.
I'm not sure Pret cares about the integrity of coffee as much.
Which I really like, you know, because give me what I like. Anyway, so I have a sip and then I say, go up to them and say, I'm really sorry, it's not hot enough. Can you put some hot water in? And then they look, their faces drop. I say, look, I know it's not really the done thing, darling, but it's what I like, you know. So actually, there can be a slight snobism around coffee, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think coffee aficionados are very particular about the type of coffee they want, how it's made, or what types there are. I'm really bad. Even though I do coffee and henna, I like things like chai lattes and matcha lattes and turmeric lattes, all of the very hipster drinks nowadays. But my favorite, I mean, if anything, my favorite hot drink is actually mint tea.
Oh, but fresh mint tea.
Fresh mint tea. But fresh mint tea and henna didn't have the same ring to it.
No, and also people might be a bit scared of it. It's like, where do we find a fresh mint tea? And, you know, it's a bit more complicated. They might think they have to smoke a hookah at the same time.
Oh, maybe I should have done shisha and henna. That might have been. That would have been interesting.
Yeah. Well, that could be your next one. Anyway, so you've done me. You were going to dry the hand. You're going to take some photos. Then what's next?
So what I'll do is I'll take two types of photos. There's one photo which will be of the henna, and on my Instagram profile I do one person's story across three images. So the first two images are the henna image, and with that the caption is going to be a quote. So I'll write up some questions for you, email them over, and it's just quotes about things that we've spoken about today.
Okay.
So
I'm looking forward to that.
So you can just give me a little bit of more depth if we didn't get into too much depth today, about particular topics, and I'll choose a couple of your favorite best answers, and I'll accompany that with the image of the henna. And then the second photo is a profile shot, kind of like a headshot, which
Have to take it, because really, funnily enough, I had a professional headshot photo done yesterday.
Oh, really?
By a woman who's gonna, it isn't up yet on the website, but it's coming, but she'll have it in a few days. Could I, or will you going to put it up now, or will you wait a few, could I send you that?
It's completely up to you. You have taken all of the henna profile shots that I've done, just because it's usually the same background, the same setting, and it's actually, coffee and henna is also a way for me to challenge my photography skills. Okay. So my first coffee and henna profiles were all just
terrible.
Absolutely terrible. Some of them were really highly edited. Some of them had filters. A lot of them were taken on my iPhone, but I've just invested in a new mirrorless digital camera, and
I'm really going for it, Zana.
It's just a passion project, but I'm going for it. I want to encourage myself to learn, you know, Photoshop and Lightroom, which is also something I've just gotten on my computer. So I'm really trying to push the quality of the content that I'm putting on my profile.
Great.
So
I can say is heavy filters on me, darling.
No, not at all. You're stunning.
Well, look, so lovely to meet you. And I urge everybody to, I'm saying to the listener, would you like to meet Zanab and do coffee and henna? If you would, how do people get in touch with you?
Well, you can follow Coffee and Henna on Instagram. That's the main place where I put everything. So it's just at Coffee and Henna, spelled out as one word. And if you're interested, just drop me a DM and I'd be happy to meet up.
Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you so much. This was so
really
fun.
Interesting. And I can't wait to see this when it totally dries. And people, I think it might frighten me occasionally. I'll be like, oh, what's that on my hand?
It does happen.
You know, but it is it's a thing of beauty. And thank you so much for spending time with me today on Radio Gorgeous.
No, thank you so much. I can't wait for everyone to hear this.
For more amazing women, go to radiogorgeous.com.